The views expressed on AM360 by the host, hostesses, or guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific and personal medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to consult an advisor for your specific circumstances.
You have listened to us over 500,000 times. American Muslim 360.
That's interesting.
Assalamu alaikum. This is American Muslim 360 radio broadcast.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
American Muslim 360 is
too legit, too legit to quit.
We will never quit. American Muslim 360, your number one Muslim radio station.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at cwsconline@gmail.com. That's cwsconline@gmail.com. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listening audience. This is Martha Naila Abdullah, Programming Manager for the American Muslim 360 broadcast. And we have to let you know that Care on Air, Civil Rights Hour, Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell cannot be with us today because they have a special visitor coming to the area. And, of course, with this particular Council on American Islamic Relations, we understand that there will be times when they are called to certain actions or situations. And so it is for today with Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell. He requests that we let everyone know and that he looks forward to being with us next Wednesday. As Wednesday has become a day, a time, a point, a middle of the week kind of reference, if you will, wherein we are concerned with and we discuss those issues around civil rights and the justice system. So later today, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will be with Imam Hananiah Shabazz, who will present criminal justice reform. So please plan to be there with us. And following that, at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Imam Bilal Salim will present prisoners, quote, reform. And he wanted to offer as well for everyone to know that the human family is always, always for reform, transforming, and then in many situations needing to be reformed. Just highlighting that word, reform. And following that, none other than our dear Dr. Amina Ali. She will be presenting, as always. She's been with us for years now and has come so, so highly in the area of birth of women. And I say in the area of women, but Dr. Amina Ali provokes our intellect, the human intellect, and asks us to go higher with our thinking. And she reveals much you don't want to miss. That's at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Dr. Amina Ali with Birth of Women. Following that, then she shares the stage with Imam Hananiah Shabazz as he presents Breaking the Habit. You don't want to miss any of these presentations today here, Wednesday, on America Muslim 360, the most listened to Islamic radio station in the nation. Please visit us at cwsc.us or go to am360.org or continue to listen to the streaming, 24-hour streaming at 701-719-4197. We thank you for being a continuous listener for American Muslim 360 broadcast. And now, for the rest of this hour, we'd like to share some public service announcements as well as a short documentary. Enjoy. Assalamu alaikum. God's peace be upon you.
On behalf of the Community-Wide Shura Conference, Board of Directors, the Mohammed Schools National Alumni Association, the Islam in America Movement, the Muslim Enterprise Institute, and all honorary co-chairs, you're invited to an unprecedented event for our Muslim and fellow faith communities. We're marking the 10th anniversary of the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, America Muslim 360, with a family, friends, and community cruise to beautiful Cozumel, departing from the famous Florida Gulf Coast of Tampa on March 5th, 2020, aboard the magnificent Carnival cruise ship Paradise. Welcome aboard the CWSC 2020 National Intelligentsia Interfaith Cruise to Cozumel, featuring Early Welcome to Tampa by local faith communities. And then, it's Bon Voyage to Western Caribbean Cozumel, Recreation Time, including daily congregational salat, halakha circles, and physical exercise. Juma at Sea, National Symposium with panel discussion, call for and presentation of papers and awards, published authors circle celebrating the scholarship of our group intellect, and more groundbreaking intelligentsia presentations, unique artistic expression. Meet and greet the American Muslim 360 Radio National Talk Show host. Join hands in the Neighborly Needs Community Service Project, and then attend the CWSC AM 360 Black Tie Gala and Awards Ceremony, including recognition of all CWSC scholarship recipients. All of this in addition to enjoying everything the Paradise has to offer, including spas, 24-hour room service, shopping, shore excursions, movies, and activities for the whole family. Although we cruise in 2020, we only have a few weeks to get you the best prices, so don't delay in reserving your cabin and sharing the cruise with family and friends. Call 1-800-327-5782. That's 1-800-327-5782. And mention Community-Wide Shura Conference booking number 6DLB36. That's 6, D as in David, L as in Larry, B as in Bobby, 36. Visit CWSC for more information. We look forward to celebrating with you aboard the Paradise in 2020. Together, we can remake the world.
It's a celebration. Let's celebrate. Come on now.
Celebrate. Come on. Al Mukminu Islamic Center welcomes you to our weekend conference, Marriage is Happier Than, Married and Single Social, March 15th, 16th, and 17th at the beautiful Crown Plaza Hotel in St. Louis. We are honored to have Imam Dr. Nasir Ahmed as our guest to feed. Friday, we will have a single social followed by a culture night extravaganza with music from Islamic Force and more. Saturday, the itinerary is set to begin with a halal breakfast at Golden Pancake. Later, you can participate in an off-site excursion to the St. Louis Gateway Arch. Mark Shaheen will facilitate a workshop titled Sailing the Seven Seas from Courtship to Partnership in a panel discussion with distinguished guests, including Imam Dr. Nasir Ahmed, Imam Bashir Ali, the National Convener of Imams, Minister Donald Muhammad of Mosque 48, Imam Kareem Hamid of Al Mukminu Islamic Center, Bahar Bastani of Dar es Salaam Mosque, Linda Bilal of Chattanooga Islamic Center, Manera Habil, the co-host of Courtship and Marriage on AM 360. All of this will lead us to our grand banquet where we will honor those who have maintained longevity in their marriage. We'll also hear an address on marriage from our keynote speaker, Imam Dr. Nasir Ahmed. Sunday, we will wrap up the conference with Pauline. The registrations go to marriagesinglesocial.eventbrite.com or contact Radia Mufin at 314-283-0417 or Medina Wakil at 314-330-4481. We can't wait to see you there.
America's largest Muslim civil liberties and advocacy organization sing to the airwaves of the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Premiering on American Muslim 360 is the Council on American Islamic Relations, also known as CARE. CARE on Air, the Civil Rights Hour, hosted by CARE Atlanta Regional Executive Director, Attorney Edward Ahmed Mitchell. Help spread the word because together we can remake the world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chapter 1 in the Criminology course, based upon the textbook Criminology and Integrative Introduction, 5th edition, by Frank Smellinger. So, our first chapter is basically an overview of what is criminology. Hopefully, you still have your Introduction to Criminal Justice text, and I would strongly recommend that you review the chapter that covers this particular topic because it'll give you a really good, strong overview of what we're going to do going forward. So what is criminology? As
well,
most
criminology
of you understand, is basically the study of what causes crime. You know, what are the causes of crime? So what we start off with is, you know, what is crime? Well, people look at crime from different perspectives to determine what is crime. Mostly as people going into the criminal justice system, we're probably going to look at it more from the legalistic perspective. You know, what the law tells us about crime. Then there's the political perspective. You know, what do the people in the political structure in our government, the people that are in the political parties, you know, what is criminal to them? And as you know, there's a great debate, whether it be abortion, whether it be gay marriage, whatever, as to what is crime and what is deviant behavior. There's a sociological perspective, certainly looking at crime from the perspective of society being involved and leading people to go to crimes, and a psychological perspective with regard to, you know, what's going on in people's heads. And we're going to look at a lot of different theories in this course as to what the causes of crime are. And like I said, you get a really good overview in your intro to criminal justice text. And those of you that had me last quarter, I gave you a real nice cheat sheet that I purchased, and I'll give it to you all after we start our class next week. So again, the perspective is very important. It determines what the assumptions are that people make and what questions that we ask when we're talking about crime. This book primarily looks at crime from a legalistic perspective. With that in mind, we're going to spend probably half the course looking at the various theoretical causes of crime. What do researchers and people who are studying crime, what do they believe the potential causes are? And, you know, we're also going to find out that it's not always just one thing, but maybe a combination of things. The textbook, and remember, your textbook is an ebook for this particular course. And some of you I know are okay with that, and some may have a little difficulty, but it is important that you figure out how to get to it and to look at it, because it's going to be a valuable resource for you, especially as, you know, there's quizzes every week. You really need to look at the textbook. And of course, I can share my highlights with you as I go through the this version of the textbook. So definitely start looking at it. All right, so the legalistic perspective, crime is defined as human conduct in violation of the criminal law of the state, the federal government, or a local jurisdiction that has the power to make laws. So what do we mean by local jurisdiction? Well, the city, the town, even a county might be considered a local jurisdiction if they make laws that affect the people within that county. And that's something that we call jurisdiction. All right, so actually I was slightly interrupted, but we were talking about the legalistic perspective, and as you can see, the definition on the screen that we already covered. Moving right along, some shortcomings of that perspective. It basically, you know, gives power to those who make the laws, and, you know, the people that have that power, they're the ones that make the laws and determine what is criminal and what is not. Insists that the nature of crime and the nature of law cannot be separated. But not all moral acts are contravened by statute. And it fails to recognize that formal law did not always exist. You may remember from your intro class, we had something called common law, and things weren't necessarily written down.
Common law.
All right, the political's perspective, crime is a result of criteria that's been built into the law by powerful groups that are then used to label selected undesirable forms of behavior as illegal. So, same political perspective, those people might actually create the legal perspective. Laws serve the interests of the people that are in power, the politically powerful people. Crimes are behaviors that those in power perceive as threats to their interest. So it's an interesting structure, construct that people look at today, suggests that those in power want to keep down a certain group of society, and there are the laws to do that. All right, the sociological or socio-legal perspective. From that perspective, we look at crime as an antisocial act of such a nature that its repression is necessary or is supposed to be necessary to the preservation of the existing system of society. So it's basically an act that people within the society feel is not natural. Crime is an offense against human relationships, first, a violation of the law, second, according to the sociological perspective. And the psychological or maladaptive perspective, crime is problem behavior. It's human activity that contravenes the criminal law and results in difficulties in living within a framework of generally acceptable social arrangements. Includes any harmful or potentially harmful behaviors by a person. So, if you remember from your intro class, we talked a bit about crime and deviance. And you can see with the Venn diagram in the slide here, not everything that is deviant is also illegal. You know, it might be that some people think certain types of dress styles, certain types of things that people might wear, maybe tattoos, piercings, certain hairstyles, are deviant. That sounds like a really nasty word, but deviant meaning that they differ from what the norm is for society. Now, you might even think if you go to, say, a formal event, like a wedding or something, and somebody comes dressed completely different from everyone else, that might be considered deviant, even though, you know, it's not illegal and it's probably not even really wrong. It's just different from what the expected norm would be. So understand that not everything that is deviant is necessarily illegal. So, on the other hand, there might be things that are illegal that certain parts of society think are perfectly fine. You know, we talk about marijuana. You know, there's states, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, many states around here where it's still illegal. But go out to Colorado or Washington State, it's not illegal. But there's people here who use it that think it's perfectly fine, a certain group. And you may find other cultures where things like that may be perfectly fine. And then you have in the middle of the diagram, in what looks like a kind of green color, things that are illegal and deviant. And you think about stuff that are illegal and everybody pretty much agrees that they're wrong, like murdering somebody, like sexual assault of a child, stuff like that. You know, the examples on the slide, unusual dress styles being deviant, indecent exposure being a crime. Now, of course, even that example isn't that great because there was a case, I believe in Florida, of a guy who, you know, walked around his own house naked in front of the windows, but because he was in his own house and within his grounds, that wasn't illegal there. It was, basically don't look in his windows was the situation. All right, so what should be criminal? Well, there's not completely agreement on what should be and what shouldn't be. Just the discussion of the difference between what's illegal and what's deviant and the things that are both basically tell you that there's not always agreement with regard to some behaviors like marijuana, like prostitution, even things such as abortion. Some people would think it should be considered murder, where we all know that the Supreme Court decided many years ago that it is illegal behavior. But there are still people who disagree. You look at the recent case, gay marriage, where people based on their religious beliefs feel that is a deviant and an inappropriate behavior, but the Supreme Court just recently decided that it is basically legal in the entire nation. So we have two contrasting perspectives. The consensus perspective, which is basically everybody agrees, and a pluralist perspective, where you have differing viewpoints. Our consensus, laws are enacted to criminalize given forms of behavior when agreed upon by members of society. Most applicable in what they call homogeneous societies. These are societies where basically everybody thinks the same way, agrees the same way, lives the same way. And certainly, you're not going to find that here. You may have pockets of homogeneous society within the United States, but certainly not overall. Pluralist, behaviors are criminalized through a political process after a debate over appropriate course of action, and you have a legislation and appellate court action. Most applicable to diverse societies, we're probably closer to pluralist than anything else, but keep in mind that certainly there are some crimes that everybody agrees, you know, serial killers, murder in any form, basically, most people would consider to be illegal. So we have a combination of both pluralist and consensus, but for the most part, you know, we go under a pluralist way of doing things. So criminologists. Now we're studying criminology. Well, there are people called criminologists. What do? They're the people that study crime, criminals, and criminal behavior. One of the things I'm going to ask you to do in the first or second week of the course is take a look at some periodicals that I have in the LRC that have reports created from research studies done by criminologists. And you can see the kind of things that that they do, the kind of things that they study, the level of detail that they look at crime that you're not going to see in your newspaper, you're not going to see on news, you're not going to see on Facebook or your Instagram account. These people look in fine detail to try to figure out what's going on. That's what criminologists do. Criminalists are those people that a few of you actually came here saying you wanted to be. You know, somebody who's in CSI or forensics. Criminalist is a specialist in the collection and examination of the physical evidence of a crime. So a criminalist, somebody who's a ballistic specialist, would be considered a criminalist. A forensic chemist might be a criminalist. You know, people who go out and lift fingerprints, who look for DNA, and all those types of things, criminalists. In your criminal investigation course and in your forensics course, you're going to be acting in that role. Some of you will be. Criminal justice professionals are people, it's a very general description here, but other people that do the day-to-day work of the criminal justice system. And really, criminalists fall within that group of people, but we're talking about police officers, corrections officers, court workers, judges, defense attorneys, prosecutors. You know, remember from your intro course when we talked about the court work group, all those people that are involved in the criminal justice system that work doing it every day are considered criminal justice professionals. All right, academic and research criminologists. Again, I'm going to show you some of the periodicals that are put out by the American Criminal Justice Association, or American Society of Criminal Justice Sciences, American Criminology Association. There's various different groups. And these people do research studies, and they publish these studies for other criminologists and other people to read, other members of these groups. I happen to be a member of a couple of those groups. That's why I get these periodicals. So you're going to get to see them. But basically, who are these people? Well, I'm not one of them. Your research criminologists, academics, work usually in larger, major universities. Certainly, we have them in this area working at Temple, working at Rutgers, Drexel. You know, St. Joe's, I believe there's a couple people over there that get quoted all the time. Even my alma mater, LaSalle, there's some people working over there. But we're talking about people generally who have doctorates, PhDs, in criminology, criminologists, criminal justice, or other related fields. There was, as I mentioned in my video the other day, a anthropologist that was studying crime in Kensington, looking at what the social makeup, what the lifestyle and those things that are going on in that area of the city, and how it may have contribution to the causes of crime. So that's a related field, anthropology, because that particular person is focusing on anthropologic causes of crime. They generally, like I said, teach in major colleges and universities. They conduct research designed to help advance criminological knowledge, and they write for publication in journals. And like I said, I'm going to show you some of these journals so you can see what it is that these people do. So what is criminology? Well, I gave you a basic definition in the very beginning. The textbook definition is an interdisciplinary profession built around the scientific study of crime and criminal behavior, including their manifestations, causes, legal aspects, and control. And it focuses primarily on the causes of criminality. So, as I said, it's interdisciplinary. That means that it brings together a lot of other areas of study to try to figure out what crime is all about. You see the multi-legged table in this particular slide with the guy that kind of looks like Sherlock Holmes. All right, these interdisciplinaries, you have the anthropology to the far left, like I mentioned, philosophy, biology, law, sociology, medicine. And we're going to talk about a guy named Adrian Raine, who's a psychiatrist and a criminologist, who's looking at brain studies and what's going on in the brain that is a potential medical reason for crime, or biological or biosocial. Political science, ethology, psychology, economics, ethics, and psychiatry. People can look at crime from all of these different disciplines to try to piece together a variety of causes. And as I will continue to hammer throughout this course is you can't look at just one of these causes. And I'm going to show you some things from Adrian Rain. I have his book that came out in 2013, which I strongly recommend that you get a copy of and read. Like I said, I'll show it to you. It's about the potential biological causes of crime. It's an awesome book. But he goes and he looks at all the other theories and suggests that it's not just the one thing, not just something that might be going on in somebody's brain, but a combination of different things that might be going on with these people. So criminal justice, to be clear, and that's why we have these different definitions listed here, because we don't want to mix the terms and misunderstand. Criminal justice is the application of the criminal law and study of the components of the justice system, the police, the courts, and the corrections. All of you should understand that very clearly. Seven of you are just coming off of the intro to criminal justice course, so you should know this very clearly. And the rest of you coming up from justice administration, so you pretty much studied the same stuff. That's what criminal justice is about. Mainly we focus on control of lawbreaking. Of course, there's people out there that suggest that we've been doing it wrong for many, many years. I have a book at my desk that is called Criminal Justice at the Crossroads by a guy named Kelly, another one of those university professors that studies crime. Basically suggests that crime control is a model for dealing with crime has been unsuccessful, and we need to come up with something new. And we're going to look at that, because criminology is really about those types of things. What's the causes? If you find out what the causes are, well, maybe there are some policy implications where you can, if you know what the cause is, you can address that cause and then eliminate the crime problem. Theoretical criminology is basically a subfield. You're going to find it in colleges and universities. Basically, they're going to throw out explanations for criminal behavior. And theoretical in that these people come up with theories and they make up the theories and say, well, I think all crime stems from, you know, lack of opportunity in the inner city. And they have to then that's their hypothesis. And then they have to kind of make that hypothesis into something that they can study, which we're going to talk about, I believe it's chapter 3 when we talk about research. So there's people that are working in colleges and universities that are doing this, what we call theoretical criminology, and then through their studies they come up with explanations for criminal behavior. All right, so what is it? Theoretical criminology, they come up with a theory. They have some clearly stated propositions that posit relationships, basically put things together, often of a causal sort, between events and things that are under study. So as I said, you know, some might say, well, we believe that the main cause of crime is that there's a lack of opportunity in the inner city, you know, not enough jobs, not enough income, not enough, all these different things. And to some degree, that's certainly true. But is it the sole thing? Well, the theory, they're throwing out that theory, and then they have to come up with a way to explain it or to basically support their theory. So there have been many, many theories that have been developed over the years to try and understand crime. We'll find that some of them are absolutely ludicrous. We touched on them a little bit during intro to criminal justice. We're going to look at them a little bit more. We're going to have people saying that the shape of your body, you know, the fact that you had really big earlobes or big lips or some other, or your arms dangled down at your side really, really long, meant you were a criminal. Well, you know, that sounds absolutely crazy today. But those were theories, biological theories. So we're going to be looking at that kind of stuff. So what are theories, or what type of theories are there? There's a general theory of crime. A general theory tries to explain all or most forms of crime through one approach. You know, basically saying, yeah, because of this one thing that's happening, there's crime. Whether it's somebody saying it's biological, sociological, psychological, you know, all crime is because of this reason. And then there's what they call integrated theories, is taking different concepts and saying, well, and Adrian Rain does this really well, different concepts. Well, you know, there are some people that have, say, a predisposition to getting involved in crime because of some problems they have in a part of their brain. And we'll look more closely at that when we look at Adrian. but just having that problem doesn't mean they're going to commit crimes. The environment that they live in while having this problem with their brain then might create that criminal. So somebody who has, you know, the brain issue but is in a very supportive home life with a lot of people looking after them might not be involved in crime, but somebody who's got no support, nobody looking out for them, you know, might go crazy. And we're going to look at that. Criminology and social policy. Well, this, I think, is one of the very, very important reasons that we even study crime. Because what is social policy? Social policy is government initiatives, programs, plans to address problems in society. You know, when all of a sudden the Congress votes and says, we are going to mandate that there's a fence built along the Mexican border, like Donald Trump is talking about. You know, maybe the Congress comes out and says that. That's going to be a social policy, and that's going to automatically stop the immigration of illegal people into our country, and is going to stop the crime problems in states like Texas, Arizona, California, Nevada, that are so close to the border that these people are causing havoc down there. That's social policy. Well, when we take criminology and social policy, we actually look at the causes of crime and develop policy based upon this well-conducted research. So we can really do our policy thoughtfully instead of just doing stuff. And we see in our government, sometimes somebody comes up with an idea, well, there's a problem here, this is the way I want to deal with it. And they don't even bother to look at what the theoretical people are saying, and don't even know that, you know, we've already studied this and found that that's probably not going to work, but they do it anyway. Social policy and public crime concern. Like I said, and we know this from years of study, concern about crime is not always related to the actual incidence of crime. And we see that today. There's people that are all fired up about Black Lives Matter. People on the police side are fired up about the killings of police officers. Now, if you look at the actual data, you know, the number of young Black men killed by police officers in the past year may be no greater than, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Maybe it was even higher back then. But now, what's going on? People are seeing more of it. There's people that are active talking about it, and maybe it looks like it's a lot greater. I remember many years ago as a DARE officer, there was this one summer where we constantly were hearing reports about children who had been abducted. And the parents in my school district were going absolutely nuts, thinking that their kids were going to get kidnapped off the corner. And when you actually looked at the data, you looked at the number of reports of children who were abducted during that year, it was no higher than the year before or the year before that. But because of the intense coverage, and maybe because some of them, they were so close together, there was a great amount of fear and great amount of concern that we had to do something about this. And we see that all the time, especially with our 24-hour news cycle. You know, something that you know, in the 1960s, nobody would have heard about something going on, you know, a single murder in California, where now we hear about it overnight. Polls show that the majority of respondents believe crime is more prevalent today than a year ago, where crime rates have actually been declining since the mid-90s. Now, remember, some of you looked at your crime stats in Intro to Criminal Justice, and you know over the last 2 to 5 years what's actually going on in your community, and you know whether that's true or not. But you really have to look over a much longer period of time to get a really good idea about it, and we'll talk about that in a future lesson. Crime, terrorism, national security are major concerns. We know that. Just this Iran nuclear deal. You know, there's people all concerned about Iran getting a nuclear bomb. Today, as I'm recording this, it's September 11th, 2015. 14 years ago on this day, a beautiful day in September, just like today, thousands of our citizens were killed because of a terrorist attack. So those types of things heighten the awareness and heighten concerns. Concern about crime is an important factor in determining public policy. Political agendas focusing on reducing crime are often very well received. Some of them are misguided, But because crime gets so much attention, when someone comes out and says, hey, I'm running for president or I'm running for Congress and I want to do this about crime. You know, look at Donald Trump as an example. I'm going to build a wall and I'm going to make Mexico pay for it. And so many people are on his bandwagon. Whether it's going to work or not, who knows? All right, so the theme of this book, we're looking at social problems versus social responsibility. Social problems suggest that crime is a manifestation of problems that are in our society. Public health model is used to deal with crime. In other words, our society is sick and we need to make it better. A lot of money spent on it by the government, a lot of social programs. A macro approach or an overarching from the top approach, where the social responsibility perspective says people are responsible for their own behavior. They choose crime over other legitimate options. Some of you in our quiz that I put out there, you know, it's more like a pretest, could have been a poll, but some of you actually believe this, as I do, that people make their own choices and that we have to have crime reduction strategies that address the individual. And that's what we call a micro approach. The reality is probably somewhere in between. We have to look at the social context of the crime. Each crime has a unique set of causes, consequences, and participants. You know, there's some people more affected by crime than others. Crime provokes reactions from many, many different sources. Again, especially with, you know, the 24-hour news cycle. I'm actually recording this at 6 o'clock. I'm missing the beginning of my 6 o'clock news, but I want to get this done for you, especially since at least a few of you have already asked, where's the lecture, which is really, really cool that you're looking for it already, and class is starting a week from today. So I'm really looking forward to doing this with you. All right, so making sense of crime. Some people feel crime is a social event. It's never isolated individual activity. It was like, if it only involved one person and it didn't involve anybody else, would it be a crime? I mean, there has to be a victim. Crime is a social construction or social construct. So there's an interaction. There's some type of interaction, whether it's somebody stealing your identity. You may not even know they're doing it, but they are interacting with you because they're taking your stuff. Crime may have many causes and many meanings, and we're going to be looking at all kinds of stuff in that regard. Social relativity. Crime is socially relative. And this is really, really important, because, and we can see this really easily, social events are interpreted differently according to the cultural experiences and personal interests of the initiator, observer, or recipient of the behavior. Crime means different things to different people. And none so clear as have a murder in a small town where they never have them, and there's a hue and cry and an uproar. People go crazy. Have a murder of a person the same age, you know, and all the circumstances are the same in an urban area where they happen every day, and you don't hear the same outcry. So, causes and consequences of crime, just take a look at this chart. It gives you... All right, this was tough. I'm recording this actually in the office. I should have locked myself in somewhere or waited until I got home, but I had been meaning to do it at home for like the last 3 or 4 days. So I got interrupted again. But anyway, I may re-record this later on and fix it up, but I want to get it to some of you that really wanted it. So if you look at this, this is just the different flows of how things happen, how people interpret crimes, the inputs and the outputs. You know, it may be confusing for some. If you read the chapter, it explains a little bit better, but here you have the criminal event, and you have an output, see to the right, to the justice system. You have inputs from the justice system into the situation. There's interpretations, there's contributions by various people. You see the justice system. Up top, you see the offender. You know, they're contributing, and they have their own interpretation of the events. It might be, you know, I gotta get money to pay my bills. I gotta get money to put food on the table for my kids, whatever. You look at the bottom with the victim. They have their contributions and interpretations of this. You know, they're being attacked. Their contribution might be that they worked late and they're walking down a street all by themselves late at night. You know, that doesn't mean that they made a goof, but they may have put themselves in that situation. We'll look at that as well. In intro, we talked about that a little bit. Society. What are society's feelings about the crime? What are society's contributions? How did society, maybe the makeup of society, contribute to why this crime occurred? You know, all of these are just different aspects that might be involved in the causes and certainly the consequences of a crime. So crime results from the coming together of inputs provided by the offender, the justice system, the victim, and society. You know, at the very beginning, you need an offender and a victim for a crime to occur. It happens within society. So, you know, society might have some input as to what might have caused the crime, and we're going to look at causes from a sociological perspective. And then, of course, after the crime occurs, the justice system becomes involved. And sometimes the justice system is involved earlier with undercover investigations. Somebody gets a word about it, and maybe we find out about it while the crime's occurring, but not all that often. So offender contributions. What does the offender bring to the table? Well, they have their life experiences. Where did they come from? What were they used to? You know, where did they grow up? They grew up in North Philly. Did they grow up in Wilmington? Did they grow up in Camden? Did they grow up in Mount Laurel, Cherry Hill, Middletown, Pennsylvania, Bristol? You know, and what was it like? How about their biology and personality? Did they have like a brain disorder? Did they have a brain tumor? There's been situations where someone who had a brain tumor actually was involved in a lot of crimes, and as soon as that tumor was removed, they were perfectly normal. So that's, you know, something they bring to the table. Their values and beliefs, depending upon how they were raised, how they looked at people, how they valued people, you know, we have different feelings about things. Their skills and knowledge. It might determine what type of crime they commit. You know, are they good with guns? Are they good with knives? Are they somebody who is able to commit frauds? You know, what do they bring to the table? And their foreground contribution, you know, what's their motivation? What's their intent? What do they actually want to do? And what's their state of mind? Are they on drugs, or they have a clear mind making decisions? Justice system contributions, background, maybe we failed to prevent crime, inappropriate police patrols, whatever. We failed to identify or inhibit specific offenders. Maybe people, you know, we've heard of somebody who was arrested, like that illegal immigrant that killed the young lady in San Francisco, was in and out of this country, I believe, like 6 times before he committed that murder. You know, and we failed, obviously, as a country and as a justice system to control that person. One of those things is preventing release of recidivists, which probably should be the focus. If we can identify those people who are the most dangerous and most likely to commit crimes, aren't they the people that probably ought to be continued to be locked up? Immediate contributions or features of the situation. Was there a police officer nearby or were they not there? You know, that could obviously be a big, big, big thing. If a police officer is standing on a corner, the drug dealers aren't going to operate on that corner. Police officer is 3 blocks away, well, maybe that corner is pretty hot. Availability of assistance. You know, can you get the officers there quickly? Can you get assistance from other agencies? Are your officers willing to prevent crime? Are they willing to intervene? And this is a big topic most recently. You know, with all the hubbub about whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's charging officers for the death of in-custody people like in Baltimore. You know, Baltimore, some people claim that crime in Baltimore skyrocketed after the Freddie Gray case when those 6 officers were charged because the officers are afraid to do their jobs because if somebody gets hurt, they're going to wind up getting charged even though, you know, they acted in good faith. So we do have a problem right now where maybe officers are holding back because of the fear of prosecution or the fear of being accused of brutality or some other thing because they're doing their jobs. And certainly response time. How long does it take the officer to get from wherever they are to wherever the crime is occurring? And that might be a function of patrol patterns, a function of manpower. You know, how many officers do you have in a particular area? You know, all those things are important. Victim contributions. All right, their presence. Just the fact that they happen to be at the place where the crime occurred. You may have of seeing the case of that young lady in Germantown that was kidnapped off the street about a year ago. The guy that did it just pled guilty. You know, he kidnapped her off the street. She got off a bus. She's walking down the street all by herself. He pulls up, jumps out of the car, grabs her, and pulls her into the car. You know, she's just out there. That's one of her contributions, coming back from a party or something, walking down a lonely street. And we hear about that all the time. You know, there were several rapes down in Center City not too long ago, sexual assaults. You know, women walking home late at night who were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. There was a deputy prosecutor from Burlington County years ago who was in Center City, Philadelphia, who was at a ATM machine just getting the money, and he was robbed and murdered just being there. Some people, there's active contributions through lifestyle. You know, if you're a drug dealer on a corner and you're known to be carrying lots of money and lots of drugs, maybe you're subject to getting ripped off by other dealers, by other opportunistic criminals, and as we saw recently, maybe even by some of the police officers. So that's a contribution. And then another situation is what we call victim precipitation, is when a victim is actively participating in the initial stages of events. You know, maybe the victim gets involved in an argument, or maybe the victim is the one who takes the argument to a higher level and the anger just gets higher and higher and then there's a fight. Maybe somebody brings a gun to the fight and somebody gets killed and that victim's dead, but maybe that victim did things that caused it to happen. And they're not always bad things. You're going to see, you know, just the fact that somebody, you know, somebody comes home from work and they're not feeling really good. Maybe they're all uptight and the person who's in the house starts giving them a bunch of crap and a fight ensues and somebody gets hurt. Victim precipitation, where the victim instigates a chain of events that results in them being victimized. Again, it's not necessarily that they did something bad, it's just that whatever they did started a chain of events that led to the victimization. You know, maybe like a road rage incident. You're jumping on I-95 at Woodhaven Road, you're coming at a high rate of speed, you cut across three lanes and cut somebody off, like me. That's happened to me I don't know how many times, and I just like blow it off. But maybe somebody's cut off and they chase this person down and run them off the road. Well, that would be victim precipitation, because that one person was acting, driving crazy, almost caused an accident, the other person reacted inappropriately, and a road rage incident occurred. Society's contributions. Society, you know, what are the social practices? What are the conditions? You know, and we talk about this all the time. You hear about it in the media, you know, whether it's, you know, poor areas of Baltimore, places in Philadelphia that are run down, Camden, you know, what's going on to help the people in those areas? What are the conditions? Does that contribute to crime? The socialization process, how are people raised? How does society treat people? Foreground contribution, what's the distribution of resources, what's available for people? Accessibility of services, how quickly can I get what I need to help me? Immediate effects of crimes, all right, the outputs affect all the parties involved. Obviously the victim's attacked, the investigation might lead to the criminal getting arrested. The criminal justice system has to expend resources and money to do the investigation, to prosecute the case, and society obviously is involved as well. Impact is affected by our filters, results in ongoing interpretations before, during, and after the crime. You know, how do we perceive it? Everyone associated with the crime engages in interpretations. Again, we all have our different perspectives on how we look at the crime and the situation. So, integrated approach to crime means we're attempting to identify and understand multiple causes. As I said earlier, criminology is really an interdisciplinary thing, and there's not just one cause. So, an integrative approach, as we look at in this textbook, is we're looking at multiple causes of crime, and we highlight the processes involved in the criminal event as it unfolds, and then analyze the interpretation of the crime phenomenon. Try to figure out, you know, what are all the different pieces that came together in this puzzle that created this crime.
Dear listening audience, we pray that you enjoyed
the documentary that was shared, preparing us for this afternoon, this evening, 6 p.m., Eastern Standard Time's presentation. Again, Attorney Edward Achme Mitchell could not be present today, this morning, because he had a spur-of-the-moment situation, which will happen with CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And this is CARE on Air, Civil Rights Hour. And do plan to attend next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this afternoon at 6 p.m. with Imam Hananiah Shabazz for Criminal Justice Reform. And then at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Imam Bilal Saleem with Prisoner Reform, followed by Dr. Amina Ali with Birth of Women. And following that at 9 p.m., Breaking the Habits.
Do plan to be here with us on American Muslim 360. People make their own choices. Which is it? Or is it a combination of both? The people that are put into certain bad situations, some make